Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping us listeners fulfill the greatest need we all have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with the ungodly tribe of Dan. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. So in the book of Judges, starting in chapter 17, we see the religious decline of Israel. And we have it in this example of the household of this man, Micah. Micah and his mother are stunning examples of hypocrisy. Every word they say that is recorded for us and every action they do is just hypocritical in every way. We see that Micah's mother blesses him for stealing from her when he admits to it. She wholly dedicates the money he stole to the Lord to make an idol. Wholly dedicated translates into 200 out of 1,100. When Jonathan, Moses' grandson, comes looking for work, Micah makes him his priest of these idols. He calls this younger man a father, though he really becomes them like his son. He thinks Jehovah will be pleased with him for having a Levite as his priest, when what the Levite is doing is serving idols. This stunning hypocrisy shows that ignorance of the true God prevailed in Israel at this time, and it was all because they had failed to cast out these sinful Canaanite nations and watch them and learn their wicked ways. So today we are going on from Micah to consider the ungodly tribe of Dan. In Judges chapter 18, and starting in verse 1, it says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. And in those days the tribe of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for itself to dwell in. For until that day their inheritance among the tribes of Israel had not fallen to them." Now it tells us that in that days there was no king in Israel. And as we've discussed before, I believe that those days was actually early in the book of Judges. Not in the time after Samson, so this is not chronological with chapters 1 through 16, but this is in the early days after their conquest of the land, maybe in the days of Othniel, the first judge, or maybe Ehud or Shamgar, the second or third judges at the latest, but most likely Othniel, the first judge. So there was not a ruler, but the problem is that there should have been a king, and that is Jehovah was the king. He was their true king, but the Israelites weren't obeying him. So since they weren't obeying the Lord, they had no true ruler. Now, the tribe of Dan had been given an inheritance by God, as indeed God gave to all the tribes. And yet they had failed to take that inheritance. Judges 1 and verse 34 says, "And the Amorites forced the children of Dan into the mountains, for they would not allow them to come down to the valley. And the Amorites were determined to dwell in Mount Heres, in Aijalon, and in Shealbim. Yet when the strength of the house of Joseph became greater, they were put under tribute." So the Danites had an inheritance from the Lord that they were supposed to take. They were supposed to wipe out the Canaanite nations, drive out all the other nations, and take this land for themselves, but they failed to do it. And I believe that the reason they failed to do it, if they had depended on the Lord, well, then he would have enabled them to do it. He would have given them the power. He would have given them the ability, but they didn't do that. So the amount of their inheritance that they actually took and were dwelling in was small. And therefore, I believe that they were feeling crowded. Now, notice this talks about the tribe of Dan, but this clearly is not all the Danites, because some did remain in their given land. And the last judge we examined, Samson, the 12th judge, his family lived in Dan in their proper territory. So when we're talking about the tribe of Dan here, the ones who we're talking about is one of the tribal families, but not by any means the whole tribe. But certainly they were feeling crowded because they had failed to take all the land that was supposed to be theirs. Verse 2, "So the children of Dan sent 5 men of their family from their territory, men of valor from Zorah and Eshtaol, to spy out the land and search it. they said to them, "Go, search the land." So they went to the mountains of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. So the children of Dan, and this is really the sons of Dan. Remember that sons to the Hebrews meant their representatives, their leaders. And they send 5 men to spy out the land and to search for a place outside their own inheritance to dwell. Notice it says 5 men of their family. Now Dan was a tribe, but tribes had subfamilies under the whole giant family of the tribe. And so this was one of the families that were feeling crowded, didn't have any good territory for themselves, so they sent these 5 spies out from Zorah in Eshtaol. Zorah was actually where Manoah, Samson's father, lived hundreds of years later. But these men want to leave Zorah in Eshtaol because they're too crowded, and they want them to spy the land. Go search the land, they say. Now, remember that the entire land of Israel had been meted out to the various tribes. And yet Dan feels that they aren't capable of taking their own tribal territory. So what are they going to do? They're going to spy out the rest of the land and see where they can take a place. Now note that that would be nothing short of stealing territory from another tribe's rightful land that the Lord had given them. Well, they must have figured that their brother tribes might have land that they haven't taken yet that would be easier to take than their own. And so they're thinking, we're going to find some easy pickings rather than thinking about conquering the rest of their own rightful land. Now, if they had tried to conquer their rightful territory and had trusted on Yahweh to help them do it, he would have helped. But they didn't trust him. They thought, we'll find some easy territory we can steal from one of the other tribes. So these spies apparently head north. Judah's too strong in the south. They don't want to mess with them. So they come to the mountains of Ephraim, or we might call it the hill country if you're used to mountains like the Rockies, pretty small in comparison. But they come to the mountains of Ephraim, and they come to Micah's house and lodge nearby. So here's our famous hypocrite, idolater Micah. So they lodge in his city as they are spying out the land. Verse 3, while they were at the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young Levite. They turned aside and said to him, "Who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What do you have here?" So while they're there, they're at the house of Micah, and apparently they're passing by it on the road, or maybe they're just walking around the town, they're lodging there, and they're checking out the town while they're there, and they hear in the house of Micah the voice of this young Levite, and they recognize his voice. Now this is interesting because of what we already talked about. I sort of gave away the stunning surprise ending of the story, which is that this Levite is actually Moses' grandson. And the Lord doesn't reveal that till the end of chapter 18. But I sort of spilled the beans and gave away the surprise ending. So maybe that was why they recognized his voice. That he was Moses' grandson. Everybody knew him. So they say, aha, I know that voice. So they turn aside. Like I said, I think they were just walking down the road past Micah's house and they heard him. So they turn aside, they find him, and they ask him these questions. Who brought you here? What are you doing in this place? What do you have here? Why are you here rather than elsewhere, in other words? Verse 4, he said to them, "Thus and so Micah did for me. He has hired me, and I have become his priest." So he tells them about his employment with Micah. And he readily admits that he is a hireling. Like I said, men of God, true men of God, are not hirelings. They aren't paid to do their work, you know, hired out, and then they do whatever pleases their masters. No, a true servant of God does what's right, whether it angers others or not. But a hireling, he just does what pleases his master. And this man is a hireling. He's worshiping idols rather than the true God, and he's serving idols for this hypocrite Micah. And he's happy to do so. He's proud to say that he's become priest to this idolater Micah and is his hireling. Verse 5, so they said to him, "Please inquire of God, that we may know whether the journey on which we go will be prosperous." Well, notice the tribe of Dan. What's their attitude? Well, it's no better than Micah's. They want to hear from God, from an idolater. They find an idolatrous priest and say, "Hey, you go and ask God about our journey." So notice that this tribe of Dan, or at least these spies from the tribe of Dan, are just as hypocritical as Micah's household. They look to an idolater to reveal God to them. So they wanted him to inquire to God. Now this would probably be by the ephod, or the priestly garment that Micah had made for himself. There was an ephod, a priestly garment that the Lord had made for the high priest. And in this ephod, there was a little bag in the breastpiece, in which were contained what was called the Urim and the Tumim, or the Urim and Thummim. A lot of people mispronounce it, but I think it should be the Urim and the Tumim. Now, these were a way of contacting God. As near as I can tell, they were two equally sized stones, kind of like two marbles of the same size and shape. And I think one was dark color and one was light color. And they meant lights and perfections. Uri meant lights, and it was to bring guilt to light, or to say yes. And Tumi meant perfections. That meant innocent, or no, depending, of course, on the question you asked. And the priest would reach into the ephod. He couldn't tell which one he was grabbing. He'd grab one of the stones, pull it out. And as long as it was God's high priest, God's ephod, and God's Urim and Tumim, God would answer through this when you'd ask him questions. Now, if God refused to answer, he'd reach in, and I don't know how he'd do that. If you couldn't find, the stones wouldn't be there. But you'd know that God would answer by this. Well, but this ephod was the one Micah had made. If it had an Urim and a Tumim, it was Micah's own. And this ephod wouldn't work to reveal Yahweh's will. Only those in the true high priestly ephod would. And I would wonder if these were made so that the priest could manipulate them as he saw fit. You know, all he'd have to do is put some little mark on one or the other of the stones so that you could feel the difference. So you'd know which one you were pulling out so you could get the answer you wanted. And so I would just guess that maybe this Urim and Tumim had been made so you could get whatever answer he wanted. That would be very easy to fake. So they want him to inquire of God for them. Verse 6, and the priest said to them, go in peace. The presence of the Lord will be with you on your way. So Micah gives them the answer. And what does he tell them? Well, he tells them just what they wanted to hear. Just like a good hireling. A good man who knows what side his bread is buttered on, he gives the answer that these men want to hear. And of course, the Lord approves of them stealing land from one of their brother tribes. Why wouldn't he? In case you're wondering, I'm not speaking hypocritically there, just sarcastically. Verse 7. So the five men departed and went to Laish. They saw the people who were there, how they dwelt safely, in the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and secure. There were no rulers in the land who might put them to shame for anything. They were far from the Sidonians, and they had no ties with anyone. So they continue traveling, and they go north. They go out of Ephraim, they go up through Naphtali, and they come up to the extreme north, where none of the tribes have reached yet, and they get to Laish. Laish means a lion. And like I say, it was north past where the tribes are currently expanded. Now this territory was properly either supposed to belong to eastern Manasseh, or it could belong to Naphtali. It's kind of sort of on the border between the two, and I saw maps that kind of drew it as rightfully belonging to one or the other. Since it's up past the Jordan River and the Sea of Galilee, it's a little bit harder to tell where the border ought to have been. But definitely it was not just free for the taking. It was supposed to belong to one of these other tribes. They just hadn't gotten to it yet. Now we learn that the ones inhabiting Laish are Sidonians. Tyre and Sidon were along the Mediterranean seacoast to the west of Israel. But these particular Sidonians are far from the rest of their kind. They're kind of way out isolated in this isolated city. Now we read that there are no rulers in the land who might put them to shame for anything. And this would be overlord rulers. Some strong ruler over multiple cities would have a large army to defend any of his territory. So they were just on their own. Moreover, they had no close allies. It was just them sitting there in this isolated city. And so these Danite spies see this and they start salivating. This is perfect. This is just what they wanted. Some easy pickings. Not the hard territory, the hard battle that the Lord wanted them to fight that they would have to depend on him to win. Now this is going to be a walk in the park for Dan, to conquer this city and steal it from its rightful owner, one of their brother tribes. Verse 8, then the spies came back to their brethren at Zorah and Eshtaol, and their brethren said to them, what is your report? So the spies, having succeeded, return. And they come back to Zorah, which means place of hornets. Again, that was the hometown of Manoah, Samson's father, although that was, again, much later than this. And Eshtaol means request. It was another Danite city. And again, this is in the territory where they should have stayed. This was the part of the territory Dan had taken. There was still a lot of it they hadn't. But they don't want to do that. It's too hard. The Canaanite tribes there are too strong. So their brothers want a report. Did you find some city that would be easy for us to conquer? Verse 9. So they said, arise, let us go up against them. For we have seen the land, and indeed it is very good. Would you do nothing? Do not hesitate to go and enter to possess the land. So the spies encourage their brothers to arise, which means to go into action. So the Bible always says when it means arise, it doesn't just mean get up like you're lying in bed, it means go into action. And they want them to take the land they found. And they encourage them not to be lazy and slothful and do nothing. You have to go and possess the land. It sounds very patriotic, very much like what the Lord told them to do. But in reality, this was just covering up the fact that they had been slothful, they had been reluctant about actually taking their own land of Dan that God had assigned them to take. And then again, I believe if they had depended on God, he would have allowed them to take. So their words about doing what they ought to do are just a smokescreen for the fact that they are hypocritically going and taking something easy from one of the other tribes instead of the hard job of taking their own territory. Verse 10, when you go, you will come to a secure people and a large land, for God has given it into your hands, a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth. So this was their plan. Now, when we hear about this secure people and this large land, and they're just going to go in and wipe them out, I think we might tend to start feeling sorry for the Sidonians as they're to be cast out of their land. But that really isn't what we're supposed to do, because God had demanded this. Israel was to take this land because of the wickedness of its inhabitants. They were to destroy the Canaanites and drive the rest out. So it's not that we're supposed to feel sorry for them, but the problem is that they are going and taking easy pickings away from another tribe's rightful territory, rather than trusting God to give them their own. Now they say God has given it into your hands. Had God really done that? Had God really given them this land? Well, no, of course not. He had given them the land they were refusing to take because it was too hard. And he had given this land that they wanted to go and take to a different tribe. They had no right to it. So why do they say God has given it into their hand? Well, I think they're going off the word of this idolatrous Levite. He had told them, God blesses your journey. Even though, like I said, they're actually going contrary to the will of God to do it. Well, that's what a hireling does. He tells you what you want to hear. And this was clearly what they wanted to think. So, Dan is going to go and take this territory. Well, now we come to their theft. Verse 11. And 600 men of the family of the Danites went from there, from Zorah and Eshtaol, armed with weapons of war. So the army of 600 Danites arms themselves and gets ready to go on this mission. So this shows us how big this Danite faction is. Now, the tribe of Dan is much bigger than this. So from the record, if we weren't careful, if we didn't take careful note, we might think that this was all of Dan doing this. No, by no means. Like I said, later on in the days of Samson, we see that there are Danites still living in Zorah and Eshtaol. But no, this is just one of the tribal families. Now, it says that the 600 men prepare to go. Well, that doesn't mean their women, children, and elderly and all their goods aren't coming too. And we'll see that noted later. It's just that these 600, of course, are going to lead the campaign. It's going to be their job to capture Laish, and then the others just get to move in. So here they are. No, they're leaving their rightful home that God had given them to go and take a land from another tribe that God hadn't given them. Verse 12, then they went up and encamped in Kirjath-Jearim in Judah. Therefore they call that place Mahanah Dan to this day. There it is, west of Kirjath-Jearim. So they pitched their camp west of Kirjath-Jearim, which means house of forests, and is a place in Judah. Now the place where they pitched their camp becomes famous from then on for having been their temporary camp. people in that territory would say, oh, yeah, you mean where Dan camped that one time. And so it came to be called Mahana Dan, the Camp of Dan, even though, like I said, it was just probably their camp for a very short time. Verse 13. And they passed from there to the mountains of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. So from Judah's territory, they pass again into Ephraim's territory as they're heading north. And they come again to Micah's now famous house of idolatry in the hill country or in the mountains of Ephraim. Verse 14. Then the five men who had gone to spy out the country of Laish answered and said to their brethren, do you know that there are in these houses an ephod, household idols, a carved image, and a molded image? Now therefore, consider what you should do. So as they come to this place in Ephraim, these spies report to the others what they had found in this house as they had come to it. And they tell it accurately. They said, in this house is an ephod, a priestly garment, household idols, again having to do with ancestor worship, a carved image and a molded image. So they tell them, consider carefully what you should do. Now let's stop for a moment here and ask, what should they have done? And if we would go back to the Lord's law, it was clear what they should have done. The Lord said, if any man, if any family, if any city, or even if any tribe in Israel worships idols rather than the true God, that man, that family, that city, or that tribe should be wiped out by the others. They should not pity them. They should not spare them. They should wipe them out from Israel. So what Dan should have done to Micah and his house is destroy it. Destroy it all. Kill Micah. Burn and destroy his idols. Kill this false priest. And destroy any of the men of his city who had joined with him in the idolatry. Because by becoming idolaters, they were all worthy of death according to the law. That was harsh, but remember that Israel had been purchased by the Lord. He brought them out of Egypt, out of slavery to Pharaoh, and bought them as his own people. And he says, remember how I purchased you to myself by delivering you from slavery in Egypt. So from now on, I demand that you serve me and not any other god. So to join any other religion for any Israelite was rebellion against the God who was their master. And God demanded that rebellion be met with death. So what should Dan have done if they considered carefully according to the law? Well, they should have wiped out Micah and his household. But this is not their plan. Verse 15, so they turned aside there and came to the house of the young Levite man, to the house of Micah, and greeted him. So instead of going to destroy him, they just go to the house and they find the young Levite and greet him. Hey, hello, buddy, good to see you again. Verse 16, the 600 men armed with their weapons of war, who were of the children of Dan, stood by the entrance of the gate. So they've got their whole army there, assembled for the conquest of Laish. And the army stands there, of course, looking tough. 600 men, armed, looking tough, and they wait there by the gate. Kind of got their arms crossed, their swords in their hands ready. And they are going to, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to steal it all. They want this idolatrous equipment for themselves. So Judges 18 continues from Judges 17 to show the further religious decline of Israel in the tribe of Dan. This unfaithful tribe fails to take their own land that God had rightfully given them, and so they chose to steal land from another tribe instead. When their spies find Micah's idolatrous setup, they inquire of God, quote-unquote, there. They find an easy place to conquer, not trusting God to help them conquer their own territory. They want to take some from somebody else. When the whole tribal family with their army comes, they decide to do something about Micah's house of idolatrous worship. But instead of wiping it out as the law would have demanded, they just prepare to steal it for themselves. Well, hypocrisy and ignorance of the true God and unfaithfulness to the true God just abound in these chapters. Now let's not be like this man Micah or like this unfaithful tribe of Dan. Let's worship the Lord with the whole heart, according to the way He wants to be worshipped.
When Israel had an ungodly leader, they would fall out of the will of God. But this was also true when they had no leader. Along with the governmental and moral failures of Israel, here we see the religious failure of the tribe of Dan. Instead of listening to God, they listened to the idolatrous Micah and his hired Levite. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the ungodly tribe of Dan. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with Micah versus Dan. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you study God's Word, you know God more and you love God more. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We offer a free weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. You can also write to us with Bible questions or comments. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say goodbye for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.